everyone. Welcome to Stutter Talk, episode 510 for April 20th, 2015. I'm your host, Peter Reitzis, here in Carver, North Carolina, with some good voluntary stuttering. And I have on the line in New York City return guest, Crystal Kubert. Crystal, it's been too long. How's it going?
It's been too long. It's going really well, Peter. I'm so happy to be back on the show.
Yeah, since I talked to you last, you have gotten married. Congratulations.
I have. Thank you so much. I was thinking about how the last time I was on Stutter Talk, I think I was still in graduate school. So it's been a really long time. And yep, no longer single, now married.
Yeah, you're married.
Very happy.
You're a speech-language pathologist. You're working at the American Institute for Stuttering. And if I recall, I remember when you went through that program as a client, as a person who stutters. So we have a lot to catch up on. I have to ask you first, are you staying Crystal Kubert, or is your last name changing?
I actually kept my last name. I'm going to be a Kubert. I thought that I wouldn't be the kind of person to keep my name, but my husband actually really wanted me to keep it. And, you know, the more I thought about it, I felt like, you know, I'm a Kubert. That's my name. I want to say Crystal Kubert. So.
All right. Well, congratulations. And so you are married, and that involves meeting a whole new family. And, you know, I hear at Stutter Talk, as a person who stutters, I hear all the time about the stress of marriage, dating, saying your wedding vows. I mean, people who stutter, we worry about this stuff so much. Let's just dive in. So you met a whole new family, and here you are with a stutter. What was that like? How did you handle it?
Well, actually, Peter, I could imagine it being very difficult for many people who stutter. There was a time in my life when I was extremely ashamed of my stuttering and would try so hard to hide it, and didn't ever talk about it. But I've really done a 180 on how I handle my stuttering and how I think about my stuttering. So meeting my husband's mom and brother and all of his family was nerve-wracking for other reasons, you know, just like, oh, I wonder what they'll be like and if they'll like me. But I wasn't really very nervous about stuttering in front of them. It's something that I feel like I can speak very confidently about and feel like I kind of get some pride out of being a person who stutters. So it went really well. And I don't remember being nervous about meeting them and stuttering in front of them. I probably did some voluntary stuttering when I first met them, because that always just sort of reminds me that it's okay to stutter and that, you know, I can let myself stutter. And so that's kind of, I think, how I dealt with it a couple years ago when I met them.
So I'm going to guess here, and sometimes I guess right, and sometimes I'm just completely wrong, but I'm going to guess a good deal of the stuttering you're doing now is voluntary. Did I get it right, or am I completely wrong?
I would say I've actually been having more real stuttering recently, but I would say much of the stuttering is voluntary, and some of it is my real stuttering that I'm just sort of letting out. So it's a little bit of both.
So if you could just give our listeners a quick primer, what's one or two of the reasons that you're using some fake stuttering and you're allowing your real stuttering to come out right now? Because I know you well enough to know that you can manage or subdue or control the stuttering beast within you a bit, as a lot of us can. But why are you choosing to put it on the table right now?
For me, and I think for most people who stutter, trying to hide your stuttering or control it in a way where you're just trying to sound like you're not stuttering and that you're fluent. For me, always put too much pressure on me, and I ended up getting much more stuck and feeling very self-conscious when I thought that I would maybe stutter. So kind of putting it out there, it feels like I'm being more authentic and more of just who I am. And I've gotten so used to it that it just feels like how I talk in a way. But like you said, I can definitely talk without letting much stuttering out or doing any voluntary stuttering and have a lot of lucky fluency in a way. But I would say right now, you know, I'm being recorded. I'm a little nervous. And so letting some stuttering out actually makes me feel pretty good and makes me feel like I could say whatever I want to say and not have to worry about, you know, thinking that much about stuttering in a way. It kind of makes it so I don't have to think about it. It's like if I get to a real stutter and I could kind of just let it out, it doesn't stop me from moving forward.
So I was dating a woman who stutters for a while. Now, I'm happily married now with two wonderful children. But before I got married, I was dating a woman who stutters. And I mean, sometimes, you know, your family says things and you're like, oh, man. And remember at one point we're in the middle of dinner and she's stuttering away. She's talking. And my grandfather, just as she's talking, he turns to me and he says, can't you help her fix that? And to her credit, she laughed because she's like, my grandfather would say the same thing. And, you know, so, I mean, I'm wondering, have you had any moments where you've had to explain to your new family, you know, what stuttering is, or have you had to find yourself giving them some polite education about stuttering?
I have. Yeah. Actually, over spring break, my husband and I were out west in Portland, visiting his uncle, and he was asking me a ton of questions about stuttering. And it was kind of nice that he was so curious, and he asked some good questions and some questions that I was like, oh man, like, you know, I kind of felt it showed me that he didn't know very much about stuttering, and, you know, questions like, are you stuttering because you're nervous? Things like that. So, but I don't really mind having to educate people most of the time, especially if there are people that I love, and like I'm just so thankful that we're having the conversation. But I think it's something interesting about stuttering that people who stutter are sometimes put in the position where they have to. Not that they have to, but it's so helpful to explain stuttering to people. And it almost feels like we, as people who stutter, are here to like educate the world a bit, just to make it better for other people who stutter. I kind of wonder if that's a lot of pressure for some people. And, you know, how do you feel about that, Peter?
We just do our best, right?
Yeah.
You know, like I recently had a school administrator who is a wonderful person say to me, basically the person informed me that part of the reason a child was stuttering was because the child was trying to get attention. And it actually didn't offend me because I respect the person so much. I really just found myself saying, I just want you to know that I really disagree with that, this person, you know. So I felt that it was a genuine thought this person had, and I just was very honest, and I explained why I disagreed. And I don't know what else to do but just share what I know. And in retrospect, I'm glad I treated their statement with polite respect, because I don't think I would change any hearts and minds if I was like, oh, come on, that's so dumb what you just said.
Right, yeah. That reminds me of recently I was talking to one of the administrators at my school, and she said to me something that she probably felt was a compliment, and I took it as a compliment, but it kind of made me laugh because she said, oh, if I talk like you, I probably wouldn't talk at all.
Yeah, I've heard. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I can't believe my principal just said that to me, but it made me laugh.
Yeah, it's like, gee, if I looked like you, I would never go out and play. Okay, I guess that's
thanks.
Wow, well, it says something about you that you can laugh about that. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
So one more question about getting married and being a person who stutters. So a bunch of people who stutter, I've heard them talk about worrying about saying their wedding vows, worrying about having kids, because what if my kids stutter? Have you had those worries, and what are your thoughts on these big issues?
As far as saying my wedding vows, I remember as I was about to walk up the aisle, I was thinking, oh, I'm starting to feel nervous. And luckily, one thing that happened that really made me feel very like in the moment was my husband was sort of crying as I was walking down the aisle, which was very emotional. And so it was just a really special thing. And so I started to feel less nervous and more in the moment. But when I was given the mic to say my vows, I did do a little voluntary stuttering in the beginning, just to kind of calm those nerves a little bit. I don't think I thought about it very much in advance, like being worried about stuttering. I actually had a very, I guess you could say, stuttering friendly wedding, in that a lot of my friends stutter. My dad stutters too, and he spoke a bit at the wedding. I actually met Jason through a friend of mine who stutters.
Oh,
well,
wow.
I think he's been on Stutter Talks. You know Dave Resnick?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Right. So Dave and my husband, Jason, are very, very close friends. And so from the beginning, Jason had been around stuttering quite a bit. And so I never felt self-conscious stuttering around him. And so, you know, the best man stutters, and he stuttered beautifully throughout his speech. Also for the, you know how when you go to a wedding, some people give a little gift to all the guests?
Oh, yeah.
Instead of doing that, we donated money to Friends, the National Association for Young People Who Stutter. So, I don't know, I myself am in a very good place with stuttering, but when I was younger, dating before I had any helpful speech therapy, it was a very different story. So back then I used to worry very much about, you know, if I could even meet a man, you know, let alone say my vows. So there was definitely a journey that went on in between being scared to even talk to a guy and then being okay stuttering at my own wedding. So, for me, I think that the wedding and having stuttering be such a big part of it was really important, and it kind of represented how I feel about stuttering, that it's okay to stutter, and that letting yourself stutter like lets you sort of be who you are. And I was just so happy with the whole day, and I don't know.
That's all. And I imagine that the entire B team was there. So
they were.
Yeah, of course.
Let me think. Roisin wasn't there, but she was invited. I think she was away doing something. But yes.
That's awesome.
They were.
Wow. And just the last question about this happy time for you. How about kids? Have you, because a lot of people who stutter worry about having kids because they don't want to pass on their stuttering to children. Have you had any recent thoughts on this?
Well, I do think that my own stuttering does have quite a strong genetic component. Like I said, my dad stutters too. In listening to the Stutter Talk episode that you did recently with Dr. Drina, I was actually surprised to hear how the likelihood of your own children stuttering, if you stutter, is not as high as I thought. I don't remember what the actual percentage was that he said, but I was surprised because I always felt that, oh, there's a pretty good chance that if I have a kid or a couple of kids that they might stutter. And I don't know, that was surprising to me. I am not sure if I'm going to have kids, but I have thought a lot about if I did have kids and being worried about, you know, their health and to things like that. But stuttering is not something that I worry about. I think that if I was a mom of a child who stutters, I could be a really great mom for that kid. And that's not something that, I fear. I think working with kids with all kinds of disabilities in the schools, sometimes, you know, I know that I could have a kid with something that I'm less familiar with, and I would have to learn how to help them. And that actually makes me more nervous, you know, than having a kid who ends up stuttering.
I understand what you're saying there. This is Stutter Talk. Peter writes this with Crystal Kubart. And Crystal, I want to cover two more topics with you. So I'd love to ask you about what you are learning from your clients who stutter. And I also want to ask you what you wish your speech language pathologist from when you were a child knew about your stuttering. So let's start with your clients. And, you know, I'll mention that when I first started working, I was really surprised and a little upset or dismayed by how many of my clients came to see me for the first time, and they were bringing in things they had learned from other speech therapy. Mm. And I just remember hearing about fluency all the time. Mm. And I remember saying to myself, this isn't organic. Like, somebody's using the word fluency, because, you know, when you hear a 7-year-old child or a 27-year-old man just keep talking about fluency, it's like they're learning it from somewhere. So I was learning that speech therapy was really, to some extent, teaching my clients that they should not be stuttering, which, you know, I found myself trying to change some of the things they had learned in previous speech therapies. And I've learned a lot more as well. What are some of the things you're learning from your clients who stutter and their families?
That's a good question. I love what you said about sort of not focusing on fluency so much, and how sometimes we have, as speech therapists, have to unteach some things. One of the kids that I work with in my school, actually, he said to me recently, it was one of my favorite moments. He said, "Crystal, I'm so glad." Oh, he said, "Thank God you're my speech therapist, because my old speech therapist used to teach me how to breathe." Mm. That's what he said. And we had such a good laugh about, you know, how funny that is and how unhelpful that is. And that was such a good moment. But you're right. It's like such a shame that so many speech therapists kind of either feel more comfortable just focusing on trying to teach techniques to help people to sound more fluent, or, you know, not stutter, and how harmful that can sometimes be in the long run. So as far as what I've learned from my clients, I think one of the biggest things is how brave people who stutter are, and how I was thinking about, I work with a teenage girl. She just turned 13, and she's one of the favorite clients I've ever worked with. And in the beginning of the year, she was feeling really nervous about going into a new school year and having new teachers. And so we talked about writing a letter to her teachers, telling them that she stutters, and a little bit about how she'd like them to kind of handle her stuttering. And at the time, in September, she wrote that she didn't want to be called on. She didn't want to have to read out loud. She didn't want to give presentations. I had to support her in that at the time, and I said that it's important that you put out there what you feel most comfortable with now, and I really hope that eventually we can work towards you feeling more comfortable, you know, letting yourself stutter and participate more. Really, almost like kind of quickly, she started to do those things in class. Like, slow, it was like was slowly. First, she was raising her hand a little bit more, and I'm just, and at this point, she's doing big presentations, and I'm so impressed with how open she is and how brave she is. And one thing that I sometimes think about is, you know, if I was exposed to this idea that it's okay to stutter at a younger age, sometimes I wonder if I would have sort of taken that in, and, you know, at 13 years old, you know?
I know exactly what you're saying, because I look back on high school and I say to myself, even knowing what I know now, would I be able to stutter openly in high school? I'm getting to the point now where I think yes, but even a few years ago, I would have said, no, I can't see it. I can't see it. But I think now I can see it. But it's hard to know what it would feel. I mean, could you imagine your 13-year-old self really believing it's okay to stutter? Man.
It's so weird. I like you said, for the longest, I couldn't. And I was so sure that, you know, I was in my late 20s when I first had helpful speech therapy. And I thought that was, like, you know, perfect timing. And in some ways it was. But like you said, one thing I'm learning is that maybe I actually would have been pretty brave when I was younger, just like these kids that I work with. So that's pretty cool.
It still blows my mind. Like, I still, like just talking to you now, I'm realizing, yeah, I really could have done real stuttering, fake stuttering when I was a freshman in high school. But it just was not a language that I spoke. I mean, who could have been that healthy when nobody talked about stuttering?
I know. Yeah, my dad stutters, and I still didn't talk to anyone about stuttering. It was a big secret how much it was affecting me. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So, all right. So I think this leads really nicely into what we wish our speech language pathologists knew about stuttering. And I can tell you that I have like 4 or 5 years of progress reports from a speech therapist from when I was like 6 until 10 or maybe 11. And it claims that I got speech therapy every year. I have no recollection of speech therapy. So
I don't even remember it.
Remember it. Can't picture the person. Can't picture a speech therapy room. So I just have to think, clearly, nobody was talking to me about stuttering, because I would have remembered that, you know, because I can remember being 5 and avoiding stuttering and how I did it. So if I was 10 and getting speech therapy for stuttering, I should remember it. Maybe that's the message, is that if you're giving speech therapy to a kid for 4 or 5 years, he should remember something about it. But anyway, this is about you, Crystal. So what would you like? And I'm being a little silly right now. There's obviously a lot more I would want a speech therapist to know. But what would you like your former speech therapist or therapist to know about stuttering and about you and all that?
I actually never had speech therapy growing up, which in a way I guess could have been a blessing, considering how bad sometimes it is. And the reason for that is the fact that my dad stutters, and he had really the bad experiences growing up and having to go to speech therapy, and he personally didn't feel like it was at all helpful. And so I was very much disencouraged from going to speech ever. And so my mom tells me that the school approached her about maybe I could be in speech, and she said, oh, we're going to turn that down. So I can't really speak to what I wish that my elementary school or high school speech therapist had done, but I could say what if I had had one, what I would have hoped to get from it.
Yeah.
If that's okay. Because growing up, I really could have used someone who fully understood stuttering, who could explain to me that I wasn't alone and that lots of other kids stuttered too. I would have really loved to have met some other kids who stuttered. So really the only other person who stuttered that I knew was my dad. So that would have been great. And also just having someone to talk to about my fears and about being scared of what the other kids would think. Because I kind of just held that in and I didn't talk to anyone about that. That would have been really helpful. Someone who just knew enough to give me a space to talk about stuttering and maybe practice the different ways of stuttering, because I used to have really big blocks and I convinced myself that there were lots of sounds that I just couldn't say. So it would have been nice to have someone ask me about that and kind of think of different ways to approach, you know, speaking and letting the stuttering out versus trying so hard to get to sound fluent, you know? Yeah, that would have been amazing, but you know, it's okay. I managed to have lots of friends and get through it all. But I know that if I had been giving them the message that it's okay to stutter earlier, things would have been just happier, I think.
Oh, sure. This is Stutter Talk with Peter Reitzes with Crystal Kubart. Crystal is a person who stutters and a speech-language pathologist at the American Institute for Stuttering, sometimes just referred to as AIS, and a therapist in the public schools. It's you got a good crew over there at the American Institute, so it must be a fun lunchtime, huh?
Oh, I'm actually not there at lunch.
Oh. It must be a fun dinner
amazing.
Time.
What?
I said it must be a fun dinner time then.
It is. I'm so happy to be there. It is my favorite part of the week, getting to work at AIS and work with people who stutter. So I love it very, very much.
That is awesome. I'm really happy for you. It sounds like Heather Grossman's put together quite a crew over there. So it's nice that you are part of it.
Thanks, Peter.
So let me bring up one last topic. You work in the schools. I worked in the New York City public schools for a little over 10 years, and I saw it there and I see it here. It seems like by far the most typical goal for people who stutter on an IEP is the child will speak with 80% fluency. It seems like the only IEP goal I ever see for stuttering unless I write the IEP. In fact, Robert Dellinger said that on air recently. He's like, yep, that's the goal, unless I write the IEP. So, you know, I'm being snarky about it. I've actually thought about writing a paper about why 80% fluency is 100% wrong. So no one steal that title because I'm working
on it. That is a great idea.
Thank you. I'll say it again. Why 80% fluency is 100% wrong. Yes, I just have to write the paper. But that's one of my main pet peeves. So you can talk about that pet peeve, or do you have another? Is there something else you see in the schools that really irks you about stuttering, or is there something you see that you're really proud of?
Oh, boy. Well, I guess I have similar feelings about stuttering. And I feel like it's unfortunate that so many speech therapists in the schools don't know very much about stuttering, and what they know is more towards let's just teach them tools and practice tools, you know, and kind of drill things in the hopes that will somehow carry over to their speech. And so I've had speech therapists say to me, like, I've taught this student how to do an easy onset, and they could do it at the word level, and they could do it at the sentence level, but they're stuck on the conversation level. And it's like, maybe you should focus a bit less on that and more on the desensitization part, because one of my colleagues actually recently sent me a video of this client that the student that she was telling me about, who can do certain techniques, you know, in isolation and kind of more of the articulation approach. And she was like, I'm really stuck on how to get her to carry that over to just speaking. And so in the video, I think she was like a senior in high school. She was clearly having a really hard time doing a lot of backing up. So she would get stuck and then start the sentence over and try to ram into the word. And she kept doing things like that. And it was just so clear that they hadn't had very many conversations about sort of being able to get on that word that's so scary, you know, and maybe it's okay to practice stuttering a little bit, you know, not just trying to say it without stuttering, you know, practice stuttering. So things like that, it's like, I think speech therapists sometimes don't know enough to not treat it like articulation.
I sometimes wonder if speech therapists never heard about stuttering or, you know, quote, fluency in grad school. If we went through grad school and it was illegal to hear the word stuttering or fluency, I'm wondering if that would change anything. Like, I wonder if it would change a thing, or if whatever treatment is being done is just sort of what people assume should be done. Because I think the assumption is, well, we're going to work on some way to not stutter. And in my experience, a lot of people go through grad school and that assumption does not change at all. In fact, it's probably just reinforced.
Yeah. Do you think that's true even if they had a really good professor for their stuttering course?
I was being careful because sometimes, like, if your professor is Scott Uris or Kristen Camella, I mean, I don't know if Kristen teaches grad school, but, you know, or hopefully me, you know, I would hope that it would be different. But there just seems this assumption, and it's also an assumption by the public, that we're the people who take the stuttering away. Like Mr. Wright says, my student's having a problem. They're going to see you and they're stuttering more. I think they should stop speech therapy. Well, no. That's a sign of success. That I'm glad. Thank you for telling me that. And I don't do it snarkily. Like, I'll explain like why that is a sign of success. But yeah, this is stuff we have to deal with quite a bit. So, Crystal, is there anything else you'd like to share that I haven't given you a chance to say?
I actually wanted to mention something about the fact that I stutter and I also have cerebral palsy. Sometimes I forget to mention that, and it's also a big part of who I am. And I've been thinking a lot about it recently because in terms of working with clients who stutter, my own journey with like the acceptance of stuttering actually was something that went by pretty quickly for me. It's like I got really intensely into the stuttering world, you know, going to all the conferences and being in helpful speech therapy and then like becoming a speech therapist. So for some reason, the idea that it's okay to stutter and, you know, not being ashamed of that really, I don't know, it just happened for me. But with having cerebral palsy, sometimes I feel like my journey with accepting that reminds me of some people who stutter that I work with that, you know, may know on an intellectual level that, yeah, it's okay. But at the same time, these feelings come up of like, ooh, actually, I don't like it. And actually, I'm afraid that, you know, people are going to judge me negatively because of it. And so, I don't know, it's just something that I was thinking about in terms of how everyone is sort of at a different pace for their journey and how sometimes it's like more slow going and the little successes are kind of a big deal. Like for with my CP, I was thinking about how this winter was really, really icy and how a lot of times walking home from school, I would wait for my husband to come pick me up and walk me across the street because there are certain parts that weren't shoveled and it was hard to do it on my own. But on days that he wasn't around, I would be too ashamed to ask like a coworker to help me. Instead I would choose to kind of like awkwardly hold on to cars and you'll almost fall. And so it reminds me a little bit of stuttering, in like sometimes people who stutter would rather suffer alone and not kind of be vulnerable and show people that, hey, I'm having a hard time with this, and you know, this is something that I need help with. So I guess I'm working on being more okay with needing help sometimes, and how in life, I guess the more you can be open to help, the healthier you are, and how everyone kind of needs help sometimes. So I guess I wanted to throw that in there just for my own self-growth and my own thoughts about, you know, having more than one disability.
Last question, I promise you, and this is such an interesting topic. Is there something about cerebral palsy or you and cerebral palsy that you think makes it a little bit harder to be as confident or comfortable with cerebral palsy as you are with stuttering? I mean, is there more support with stuttering? Is it just that you decided to face your stuttering before you decided to deal with CP, or what do you think it is?
Oh, that's a great question. I know it is somewhat because I have had a lot more involvement with the stuttering support world than anything to do with cerebral palsy. I know that stuttering support really was huge for me, but it could be something about having cerebral palsy that's different from stuttering, in that it's kind of constant. Like every time I walk, you can notice it. Also, something I think that's kind of cool about stuttering is that once you are open about stuttering and feel pretty good about it, it doesn't really have to hold you back from much at all. Whereas having a disability like cerebral palsy, sometimes like even just walking across the street, like I might need some help, and that it is hard for me because I often got so much feelings of self-worth by like doing things on my own, you know, being on my own and being able to do it. And so I feel really good that I can stutter through things and still kind of do it on my own. And there's something about CP that you need to be a little more vulnerable in asking for help, I think. I don't know. Do you feel like you need to ask for help as a person who stutters too? Am I like missing something?
Well, no, not me. Although I think that when I first started dealing with my stuttering, I verbally asked folks for their understanding or for their patience or for more time at times.
Yeah.
I remember saying to someone, hey, I'm never going to get in this conversation unless you stop talking for a second. no, I didn't have to do too much of that. You said a couple of things that I want to touch on. So this thing about CP being constant, I would think that would make it easier. And I say that because with stuttering, being someone who passed as fluent or covert stutterer, sometimes my stuttering would just appear and I couldn't stop it. And that to me was like the worst. And I would just say to myself, I wish I stuttered more. I wish it was more constant. I mean, I'm surprised that the CP, it being constant, is harder to deal with.
I think you're right. I think that back when I hated my stuttering so much, and I felt like CP was very easy to deal with, and stuttering was the worst thing in the world. So it might not be that it's constant. It's just, in some ways, it's not constant, because sometimes I'm having a harder time getting around than others. You know, like, I've been having a good month this month, but a month ago, you know, I was having a harder time, so I was taking a lot of taxis and things like that. So maybe it's not that it's constant, but sometimes it's just the fact that sometimes it's harder, and that can be difficult. I haven't figured it out. I think it's a good question, but I think that there is something different about CP and stuttering and why it might be harder to accept. But I don't know quite why.
And my strategy with this is that I know you have CP, and this is a show on stuttering. So my strategy was to bring up the stuttering and just see if or when you brought up your cerebral palsy. Because I was curious, because I know you, but I don't really know to what extent the cerebral palsy plays into everything. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you said it was much easier than stuttering or much harder. Like, I have no idea. So I was just curious of how, because you know what I mean? I didn't want to lead the topic at all. In fact, we could have gotten through the whole interview without it coming up, because I was just curious.
Exactly. I was mindful of that. I was like, oh God, I got to bring it up. All right, I have to bring it up now. You know, it's one of those things that it's really easy for me not to bring up, especially when we're just talking about stuttering. And I've gotten really used to not bringing it up so much in the stuttering world. And I think part of that is that it can be hard to be in the stuttering world and have more than one, I guess you could say, disability or identity, because, I don't know, it feels good to be a person who stutters among other people who stutter. And there's something about having that additional difference that is sometimes hard to bring up, because you don't always get the same kind of like, oh, I understand exactly what you're saying kind of feel. And I don't know.
I appreciate
it though.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I think I've mentioned on air that I have learning disabilities. I usually say, when I was a child, I did, but I do know that folks think once you have learning disabilities, you always do. But it's interesting that both of my disabilities have been pretty hard to see, But what I really find interesting is that now, as a 43-year-old adult working in the schools as a speech therapist, I get often more offended by how people talk about learning disabilities than how people talk about stuttering. Like, I recently heard a special ed teacher talking about a child with learning disabilities, and the teacher said, well, of course, she'll never have a family. She'll never have kids.
Aww.
And I said, how can you think of that? I mean, this little girl, she's bright. She wants a family. She wants kids. She wants to get married. She's going to have it all. And so,
yeah.
So I hear things like that sometimes from the people who are the special education experts. And I think, oh, it's crushing. I don't think I've ever heard someone say, oh, she can't have a family, she stutters. But
right.
Yeah, so I find myself getting offended by many things, not just stuttering. I wanted to bring up one last point. I really promise, I hope this is the last thing, because I you're being very generous with your time. You made a point about how when you start to deal with stuttering, it doesn't have to hold you back and it doesn't have to be an impediment. And I agree with you, but I do want to mention that when other people have said that on Stutter Talk, we do get emails from folks who say, look, I do the self-help. I go to the National Stuttering Association meetings. I've been to Friends. I've been to speech therapy. It's so hard for me to talk. I can't get a job. I'm working in a field I don't want to work in. So, I don't know if you have any thoughts. There's not really a question in there. I just wanted to bring that up because I do meet people who seem to be involved in speech therapy and self-help for many years, and they still feel greatly disabled. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I do. I think that is a really good point. And it almost makes me feel bad for saying that, because it's true for a lot of people, they put so much effort in to like you said, going to all the support and having good speech therapy, and it still is something that's a really big struggle for them. So I guess I should have more personalized it for me and for other people who stutter. It's not, sometimes it can still be hard, still be a lifelong struggle. And I don't know, I guess maybe I should think more about how matter-of-factly I say things,
Oh, and I wasn't trying to. I just think it's an interesting topic because I've been called out on it. I've had people contact me. We when you host a podcast on stuttering, you get called out on a lot of things. So, anyway, so Crystal Kubart, I want to thank you. And by the way, that was a real stutter for people keeping count. I want to thank you so much for coming back on Stutter Talk, and I'm just so happy for you. Congratulations on getting married and on being successful, and hopefully it won't take us a few more years to get you back on air. Let's try to do this a little bit more often.
That sounds great. Thank you so much for the opportunity, Peter.
Thank you. And I'll just remind listeners that Crystal is a person who stutters and a speech language pathologist at the American Institute for Stuttering in Manhattan. Take care, Crystal.
Bye, Peter.